Grade 3 Conference, Lecture 18, The Hebrew Scriptures, Part 2. Well, although I've been speaking about the various types of opposition, inner and outer, that you might encounter in relation to the stories of the Hebrew Scriptures, I can tell you that in most Waldorf schools, there will be one group of parents who are thrilled that you're finally getting around to these stories. And that will be, of course, the Jewish parents. In most independent schools in the United States, you can count on between 5 and 10% of your families having a connection to Judaism. In some schools, particularly in the Northeast, that proportion, like in my old school, could be as high as 20 or even 25% in a given class. They have been waiting and waiting. First, they have to suffer through those Germanic Grimm's fairy tales, which for some of them seem to be proto-Nazi. And then they have to suffer even more through the stories of the saints, some of whom they know for sure to have persecuted Jews in their time. And finally, they get in grade three to the stories of the Hebrew Scriptures. And this is very exciting. It might be that there's a parent who is fluent in Hebrew and would like to teach the children some Hebrew. I would say strongly yes to that, though you want to talk with that parent to make sure what he or she brings is not going to be too intellectual for the children. But that's a wonderful thing. You know, maybe you could even bring in a rabbi. Very good for the children to learn some Hebrew in this grade. That language has a powerful effect on the child. It really awakens the inner life. That and the Icelandic, Old Norse of grade four, these are two languages that are, you know, no less important than Greek and Latin in later grades for the children to have some exposure to. So if the children can learn the first lines of Genesis in the original Hebrew, that would be a very, very wonderful experience for them. The parents will also want to help you build the sukkah, which is a structure, a kind of lean-to that is built in the fall to celebrate that holiday. And this, too, I would say, is a very positive, good thing. It could be connected to the house building block that the children will have. And it also is a festival that is found in the words of the Hebrew Scriptures themselves. So that's perfectly valid. Very good. It might be that at New Year's time, which is right around Michaelmas time, the Jewish New Year, parents will want to bring in potato latkes. It might be that at Passover time, they will want to have a big Seder with everybody in the class, in the classroom. It might be that at Purim, they will want to bring in poppy seed pastries. And now, I would say here you have to be very, very careful. Certainly, you never want to just turn away a parent's generous offer of anything as in a kind of scornful Waldorfian way. Well, we don't do that, or we know better. But I would say that it's important for you this summer, as you prepare, to develop a sense of discernment of the difference between the ancient Hebrews and the modern Jewish people. They are not altogether the same, and in fact, there are a number of popular Jewish holidays which are technically not from the Hebrew Scriptures. They don't come from there. They were instituted later. And or certainly their method of celebration, except perhaps among the ultra-Orthodox Jews, but the method of celebration among today's more secular, conservative Jews and Reform Jews, and there are many, many, many levels of distinction in Judaism about this, it's going to be very different from what the real thing was in Hebrew scripture times. And this is, I think, something that you may want to discuss with the parents in your class, is that, you know, this is not a year in which you are learning about Judaism any more than when you taught the saints in grade two, you were not teaching the children Catholicism. You probably did not bring in a Catholic priest or a Catholic nun to talk about their experiences with one or another of the saints. You probably did not celebrate too many Catholic holidays at that time, or suggest that all the children go off for Mass because you were learning about saints who all were connected, or many of whom were connected, with the Catholic Church. That, too, I know has changed. So, anyway, this is very important. This is a very, very hot issue, and it's not always easy to understand or discuss. It permeates the politics of Israel completely. Even their archaeologists are there often as wards of the state, being told to dig up pottery shards that prove that Abraham was here and Moses was there or whatever, so that one can say that the state of Israel is a Jewish state and has always been this state of Israel. Very, very complicated. So anyway, really be careful about that. Otherwise, you do start to sort of violate church and state distinctions if you're in a charter school, or you really run the risk of offending other families. And, you know, it's very nice that parents get involved in this way. It's very good if a school gets parents involved in the celebration of the festival lives as well. If a school is doing this, that an independent school, more and more schools are finding they can't just be exclusively Christian anymore and have to open up to other groups. But it's also important in the charter school as well that there is an openness to the various cultures that are there, but a recognition that the children are learning about ancient peoples and ancient consciousness. And this is not necessarily reflected in the religious practices of today, even if there seems to be a consistent lineage from ancient times to the modern. But this is something every class is going to have to work this out in their own way. Now, here's another aspect of this, how anthroposophy and the Hebrew scriptures meet, no less difficult and controversial. Many teachers are introduced in their training to the stories of Jakob Streit, S-T-R-E-I-T. Streit was one of the early Waldorf teachers, a wonderful teacher, a fantastic storyteller. He practically invented the so-called pedagogical story, and there are wonderful collections of his work. He also was very interested in the Hebrew scriptures, and he published in German, and now these have been translated by Eckhart Pening and more recently Donald Sampson. Streit's various stories, retellings of stories in the Hebrew scriptures. The best known one is the first one, and there was light, and in this, Streit goes into Genesis. There's also the Hebrew kind of transliteration, so that you can work from that if you don't have anyone who can help you learn Hebrew. It's pretty good. You can get a reasonable degree of accuracy from it. And what Strite does is to go into greater detail about the creation, and particularly into the stories of the sons of Adam and Eve, and the sons of Cain in particular, who are sort of the progenitors of the archetypes of the arts and the crafts and the world of working in the earth. He tells these stories beautifully. No issue there. However, he claims that these stories are based on Hebrew stories, not scripture. They're not found clearly in Genesis at all, especially a story in which Lucifer gets involved in the creation of a plant and makes it hard and thorny, and Michael comes and, as it were, adds the rose to it or something like that. This kind of bringing in of a number of spiritual beings, you're kind of walking on thin ice there. And to the best of my knowledge, and to the best of knowledge of people who I think have really gone deeply into these issues, there are no such legends extant. That is to say, as far as I can tell, Jakob Strite made these stories up himself, and not just out of nowhere. He made them up out of his deep penetration of anthroposophy. One might say, and I'm saying this with a smile, he's improving on the Hebrew scriptures, enhancing them, bringing them more in line with anthroposophy. Wonderful. But I would say be very, very careful about bringing this to your class. They are in third grade learning the stories of the Hebrew scriptures. There's not enough content there. I mean, have you looked at that book recently? You could teach it 24 hours a day for the entire school year and probably not get through it. Do you really need to add something? Do you really need to emend and improve it? And, I mean, wonderful for Jakob Strite. I think if you want to have sessions after school for children who would like to learn more about anthroposophy and anthroposophical stories, those stories are fantastic. If you want to tell parents, if you'd like to do more with your children, buy this book or I'll photocopy it or whatever I can do legally and tell it to your children at home. But I would urge you, avoid those stories. And I am an anthroposophist. I think Jakob Strite is a great storyteller. And if you want to, in a way, use those to kind of enhance your own imagination, his stories about Moses, the kings, are very, very good. But I would say always go back to the original and really, you know, emphasize that. Don't let Jakob Strite do your work for you. Don't let anyone do your work for you. The important thing is really penetrating those stories yourself, and you will see that Strite's enhancements are absolutely unnecessary. That the mood, the sense of what's given in the basic austere structure of the Hebrew scriptures themselves is plenty. I've also attached as one of our resources, a PDF of a lengthy article by a woman named Pamela Lutz. She is an accomplished writer, an observant Jew who has done a lot of research in this area, and she was very, very upset at the casual way in which her child's teacher in Carbondale, Colorado, at the Waldorf School there, just kind of threw the Strite stories in as though they were equally revelatory and inspired as were the actual scripts of the Hebrew scriptures themselves. And she's written a very convincing article about why one should be very cautious in this respect. So that's included, and you can read that for yourself. Okay, so we still haven't really gone through all the ins and outs of the importance of these stories. I will proceed with this in the third part of this discussion of the Old Testament, Hebrew Scriptures, next.